And you should always ask exactly that question. How many people will see this when you're considering it in terms of, cost per thousand? It's a great way to sort of compare apples with apples. But if they can't give you that information, and I've had big signage companies say, look, I'm sorry, we have no data on that, then don't buy the sign because it has no genuine value. They've just made up a number that they think it's approximately worth to have that one rented out. Hard numbers are what you're looking for when you're talking about billboards.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next event on the card is a heavyweight marketing bout for the small to medium business owner. In the red corner, from Paradise, Australia, is David. And in the blue corner, from an English paradise, is David.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of David versus David, the podcast for the small and medium business owner, where we talk about all things business. When I mean we, that's myself here in the UK, David Pritchard, and my colleague, co-host, raconteur, wit, and general good guy down in Hobart, Tasmania, David Council. Come on in, David. How are you doing?
Hello, mate. How are you? Do you owe me money? Why are you building me up so much?
Oh, just a bit of banter, you know. When you've done like all the episodes that we've done, and you have some, off air guys, we have some jolly japes. We talk about all sorts of stuff. We talk about, and a lot of it we bring to the table in these episodes. But we have some banter and enjoy stuff. You know? We've both got to histories and stuff, and David's got a good one. He's a good guy. Good chat to. Got to chat to and what's the expression? Chew the cud. That's the one. So anyway, enough rambling again. What have we been up to this week, David? What are we going to be talking about? And anything you want to throw in the pot before we really get chatting away?
No, I think we just get into it today, David. I think we're going to continue on with where we left off last time, looking at when to choose which media. So far we've spoken about radio and television, and we spoke about Facebook and social media in general. Mm-hmm. There are a few more things that people use as media to advertise their business, and once again, it's as we said last week, you shouldn't be choosing the media first, but I suppose what we're really talking about here is what are the strengths of these media? You know, how do you know that you've written something that is going to suit this particular media as opposed to one of the others?
Yeah.
So where do we get up to? Billboards? Let's talk about billboards.
Yeah, we might have got up to it. We didn't do it. We did, like I say, social media, radio, TV, that kind of thing. So yeah, billboards, that'd be a good one. Billboards are old, aren't they? Let's face it. They've been around since goodness knows when, probably 150 years, maybe more.
Absolutely.
But they're still big business and an evolving business as well, actually. Now, I see, billboards used to be, in fact, I don't know about you, but I live not far away from an old town, and you can sort of see that, there used to be what I would call mural billboards, where you used to have stuff painted on the side of buildings. You can see when a building gets demolished sometimes and exposes an older building behind it. You can quite often still see a massive 30 foot by 20 foot painted advert almost on the side of the wall, in its faded glory. Well, that was in its own way an early billboard, I guess. But it developed over time. You get the huge wooden screens that dot the edge of the highway or prominent places on the edge of town or whatever. You get them on the, I know certainly the billboard companies, I know somebody that used to work for a billboard company and selling the advertising for them. They've developed into bus shelter signage and all that sort of stuff. So, they've developed and they've changed what they do over time, and there's the electronic ones as well now, and da-da-da-da-da. Anyway, David, so when to use billboards?
Well, you've actually just touched on a lot of the really key points when it comes to a billboard. For example, the reason that billboards used to be such a magnificent form of advertising is you approached them at a very low speed. If you were in a car in the 1910s or 1920s, you weren't rocketing along at 110 mm-hmm. kilometres an hour plus. You're approaching it, probably more at 20 kilometres an hour plus, or you were in a horse and cart, in which case, you know, you were, even if the horse was running flat out, you were still looking at it for a very long time. These days, people approach signs at a varying range of speeds, so you need to consider that. That's the first thing you need to think about. How far away can they see my sign? How safe are they to read my sign as they approach it? Because if they're not safe, they're not going to look at it. And if they are flashing past at 110 kilometres an hour, how long does that give you for them to absorb their absorb your message? The general rule of thumb is, if you can't say it in 8 to 10 words on a billboard, it's not a billboard you're looking for. So you need 8 to 10 words and a really good image. That the image should give those 8 to 10 words life. So it should say all of the other things that you can't say because you don't have enough words and enough time. So if you have more than that, it's not a billboard that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. If that's exactly what you've just written, then it could be a billboard that you're looking at. Let's just talk about some of the billboards that are out there as well, because there's those, you know, the big multi-poster billboards, you know, where they've got, they piece together all of the posters like a jigsaw puzzle to create the image. So they're enormous, and they, actually they come, you know, in a variety of sizes, and they're usually defined by the number of pages that it takes to fill each of those signs. Although these days most of the signage work is actually done on vinyl print, so they print it and it goes up as a giant skin. But you know, you're talking from things that go on the side of buildings to those big monsters that you see on the side of highways. Then you've got electronic billboards. We've all seen them as well, and they range in size as well. And what you get there is a series of images and presentations that change over a period of time. There's one here in Hobart, for example, that's at a set of traffic lights. And as the person pulls up at the traffic light, they usually get between 3 and 4 changes of the image. Unfortunately, this one is also on a curve. So if you're coming down the hill, you don't get a really good look at it. Before you're past it. So it's one of those things that sort of falls into that am I safe category in terms of taking in the image. So really it's there to get the people who are at the traffic lights trying to draw their attention in. And that's, you know, part of that safety thing is you've got to consider what are people doing when they're seeing your sign.
Good point there, because I'm aware that the angle of the board will also affect its value, its rate on the rate card. The more oblique the angle, then typically that has an effect on the number of eyeballs that are considered to see it. So, you know, if a billboard was straight on at you and got 100,000 views a day, then one at 45 degrees would be prorated down that it would be considered to give you 60,000 views a day,
yeah.
Or whatever, you know, depending what how acute the angle is and so on and so on. So yes, that's as you say, the time spent there and whatever. So all sorts of things will affect the value of that billboard in terms of its cost to you as well.
And you should always ask exactly that question: how many people will see this? Mm-hmm. When you're considering it in terms of, you know, cost per thousand. It's a great way to sort of compare apples with apples. But if they can't give you that information, and I've had big signage companies say, look, I'm sorry, we have no data on that, then don't buy the sign, because it has no genuine value. They've just made up a number that they think it's approximately worth to have that one rented out. Hard numbers are what you're looking for when you're talking about billboards. And the other thing to consider once again is if it is at traffic lights, then go and spend some time there and look at how many cars pull up at the traffic lights and how long that they're there for on average, so that they will be seeing your sign, and how many cars slip by in between, because you need to know what that percentage is. You know, if they say it's 100,000 people and you work out that 60% of them will have stopped at the traffic light during that time, then really you're paying for 100% of 60% and maybe 20 to 30% of 40%. Does that make sense? That's a weird way of looking at it, but you need to think about that, because that's the genuine true value of that sign. Other sort of billboards, and this is, you're really starting to get into signage as opposed to billboards, are those A-frame signs that people put out the front of their shops.
Mm-hmm.
They are still technically a billboard. They're a one sheet sign in a sort of an A-frame, and they need to very quickly tell the person what it is that you want them to do. And a lot of people misuse A-frame signs. They consider it just the same as another piece of signage that is on the front of their shop. But for an A-frame sign, you should have call to action. Don't just put now open. You know, now open is not a call to action. It's just indicative that you've opened up for the day and put the sign out the front.
Yeah, absolutely. There's one that I always remember. I was visiting Noosa, Sunshine Coast up that way, years ago, and there was a shop that just had a big A-board sign outside. It just said, "Nice shop." I mean, I know it's not quite a call to action there, but it was intriguing enough. It stopped, you know, that's all it said, two big words written in chalk on a blackboard A-frame, and "Nice shop." And it just caught your attention enough to make you think, yeah, you know, and because it's a touristy kind of place, you know, what are you going to do as you're wandering up and down the streets? You're going to go in a nice shop, aren't you? That one actually worked quite well. But yeah, I know what you mean. That was a curiosity-driven call to action, I guess. But yeah, there's too many that just sort of say, you know, we are open. They don't encourage you to do anything. They're not really with it.
Another thing to consider with billboards is the cost and frequency of change. How much does it cost you to change a sign, and how often do you have to do it? Because there is a point where that sign will become invisible. You know, enough people of the same people will have driven past it enough times and they'll stop seeing it. So you don't usually buy a billboard and not change the message for 12 months, for example, because people will just stop seeing it.
Yeah.
So you have to factor that in as well. So that's how you select a billboard. And it is really important because, as we said, they are very expensive as a general rule.
Absolutely, they are indeed. Not saying earlier on as well that, you know, you can consider other options for billboards as well, which may have different budgets and so on. Bus stop shelters, underground train stations, you know, rail stations, that kind of thing. You know, they're big sort of signage, semi billboard advertising areas that. You know, you imagine people waiting there 5-10 minutes for a train to turn up, and you know, they're looking around. You know, they've flipped around their iPhone as much as they can, and they've thought about this and da 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 da. And you know, what are they going to be doing? They're going to be looking at the environment around them, and they're going to advertising in that kind of format is there to catch their attention and fill, you know, 10 seconds of their time or whatever. So it can be quite effective time to do that as well, depending on, as David said from the outset here, you know, the message that you're trying to convey, if it suits the media, then that's great. If it's something that's unsuitable for that media, then think again. And David's saying there, you know, the big billboard as you're driving past at 20 kilometers an hour, 50 kilometers an hour, whatever, you know, the message has to suit that. Very few words, big imagery that conveys the same, you know, that complements the message or that drives the message. Something at a train station maybe has a little bit more information. Maybe, you know, once it's caught your attention, there's a little bit more wordage on it, perhaps. So it can vary, but get the message right first, and then get the media to suit the message.
Next one.
Anything else on signage, or was that...
I think that's, you know, that's a good rule of thumb for people to apply. The next one I think that people should consider is brochures.
You know, brochures, we use those a lot in one of our businesses, and they're very, very effective. So, yeah, I'm jumping in there a little bit, but again, different types of brochure. We get a lot of requests for electronic brochures. You know, send us do you have a brochure and price list and so on. Well, we have a load of various offers and stuff, various packages rather, that get put together. And a brochure is a really good way to put those together, along with product information, product descriptions, and so on and so on and so on. But we also have a printed version, and the printed version is different because it's something that we hand out at exhibitions, and we have a lot of trade visitors, and we want to get enough message across to them, but not overwhelm them with information. It's a brochure that conveys what we do, why they should be interested in it, what the benefits are for them, what we give them to give their customers, and so on, and the benefits of dealing with us in a reasonably short and succinct way. It's 2 or 3 or 4 pages long with imagery and stuff like that. It's a different message, but it's a message that's designed for purpose. It's something that we can give to people at exhibitions where they haven't necessarily got time, because they have dozens and dozens, hundreds of other exhibitors to wander around and pick up information. And if they're not aware of you, you've only got so much time, maybe a few seconds to interact with them, and they're just gathering information. So it's something that we want to give them that's good enough to fulfill that purpose. So we created the message and then turn it into this small brochure format to give people.
I agree entirely. What you've actually done is nicely summarised that, because there's electronic brochures, there's websites, which can be a brochure, and then there's hard copy brochures. And one of the decisions that you've got to make when you're creating a brochure, or when you've made a creative piece and you're trying to work out what it is this a brochure, is how is it going to be used? Because if it's a hard copy brochure that you're putting into people's hands, you're putting it into their hands to remind them and hopefully to send them to somewhere where there is additional information that they can go and get. So it's something that they need to be able to take away. Like you said, at an exhibition, perfect use of a brochure. You know, they're gathering up a whole heap of information. There's no hope that they can store all of the information that they've been given while wandering around talking to people. So it's an echo that will allow them to look at it and go, oh yes, I remember that. I'll go and have a look at this person's website and find out more. However, if it's not going to be used for that, then you know, there's the downloadable, the electronic brochure that people can pull down for themselves. They can put it on their desktop. They can electronically share it with others. You're using it to do that. And most importantly, a downloadable electronic brochure you should also be using to gather database. So you can find people who have self-signaled that they're interested in what it is that you've got, so that you can follow them up with other pieces of marketing information, or at the very least, try and uncover what it is that specifically they are looking for, so that you can offer them a range of solutions, not just let them come in, pick and choose, and move off by themselves. Or alternatively, you could create a website, which is a brochure that you can change as often as you like, with very little cost to yourself, that is there, and you promote and drive traffic to it as a location. So instead of going to an exhibition, for example, you consider the website to be a little exhibition all of its own, and you use either SEO or paid advertising or affiliate offers to drive people to that location where you can do all of the things that we've just spoken about.
Yeah, indeed. As you say, websites, we've talked about brochure websites in the past. Almost slightly dismissively, actually. They have sort of connotations of being not quite all the way there, are they? They're not, as in, they're not authority websites. They're not fully engaging, so on. But you can you can certainly use a brochure website like that quite effectively. It's a relatively small, anyway, few page website that really says what you're about and what you do, and is an initial way of getting going with people. Or you can build that into part of a main website, you know, with a series of landing pages and areas that are akin to a brochure website as part of a bigger website, perhaps.
Absolutely. And that's because, you know, where are your customers? Where are you? You know, if you're trying to target people in London, for example, and you happen to live in Wales, then, you know, you're a long way away from where your customer or target customer is. And therefore, a website becomes quite a good opportunity, because a website is genuinely nowhere specific. You know, it's just in the cloud. And you can then find opportunities for where your customers are. So, for example, if you're a business-to-business, then stationery stores are an ideal place for you to go and look for customers. So you can, for example, target the Facebook page of a stationery store. So the stationery store is gathering people who are clearly in business because they're interested in the stationery that they sell. And you can do a cross promotion or a targeted campaign where you're targeting people who are already like the page or the Facebook page of that stationery store. So the ad only appears for them, and you drive them from that ad back to your website.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I think we talked on the methods of doing that.
Yes.
When we were looking at the South African safari guide,
correct,
weren't we?
Yep,
indeed.
That's right.
That was I can't remember what number episode it was, but look back to about episode 100, give or take, somewhere about the 100 mark. So 20, 30 episodes ago, super episode that was. We mentioned in there as well, David, pay-per-click advertising and so on, which is a huge topic in its own. And again, we've covered that in the past with an expert in the field, Mike Rhodes, some great episodes about episode 50 or so. But when to use PPC, David?
Well, it doesn't matter whether the greater bulk of your customers or there's just one customer. If you're pursuing customers through search, then pay-per-click is an excellent way to do it. I was looking at someone's website just today, and they were making a pay-per-click mistake in that they had a website that was actually searching for a whole range of the keywords that they wanted to. They were on page one of Google within the first 3 to 4 entries as part of organic search, yet they were also paying pay-per-click to be on that page as well. Now, for my money, that's a waste of money. Because organically they're already there. They should have redirected those funds into other pages where they weren't searching and using their pay-per-click there to better advantage. But pay-per-click, you need to have a very concise message, and it must be call to action, and it must appeal to specific instances. Don't create generalist pay-per-click messages. So if you're trying to sell hammers, have a message that's pay-per-click that says, you know, something about why your hammers or what you offer as an add-on to your hammers is the number one choice, why that person should click there, and they will then be clicking and driving through. It's also very advantageous when you've got either an enormous budget or a limited budget. That's one of the beautiful things about pay-per-click is that you control your budget on a daily basis. So you need to look at it from that point of view. Another reason that you would know that if you're on a pay-per-click campaign is whether or not you need to geo-target people. So you may only want that message to go out to a town or a suburb or people within a limited range of a specific place. You know, you can do the same, for example, with a direct mail. But one of the things that geotagging and pay-per-click allows you to do that direct mail doesn't is that if a person has a mobile phone and they walk inside the circle, they're in the area, you can geo-target them. If they walk outside it, they'll never see it. So you can't do that with direct mail. Either they're in the circle or they're not. They can't be, you know, itinerantly visiting the area and being, you know, included or excluded from the sample group. But as I said, a pay-per-click message is very small. You've got to think of it like a classified ad or a tweet where you're being constrained by the number of characters that you can place in it. Your message needs to be concise and have an extremely strong call to action to attract the right group of people. Otherwise, you'll waste money. You'll have the wrong people click on your pay-per-click campaign, and that will, you know, deliver people to your page, great, but they're not going to go any further, so it won't convert. So, you know, pay-per-click, concise, call to action, highly targeted. That's what you look, you know, if that's what you've created, then pay-per-click could be what you're looking for.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, love that. Now then, anything else to add to, I think we've covered quite a lot of different medias there, when to use what, and the various nuances of them and so on. Anything else to add to those, David?
No, honestly, I would say if you're a small to medium business person and you're a bit confused, give one of us a yell, you know, send us an email, jump on the webpage, send us a message, look us up in the phone book and give us a call. You know, we very happily have a chat to you about it and try and point you in the right direction so that you're not wasting money and you are targeting the right group of people because you might be looking at something or you might have created a message that you're not sure, you know, which one of those main broad categories that we've just covered fall into. You know, there are many more things that you could be doing in terms of advertising. We have just hit, you know, the most popular group of things that people do when it comes to small to medium business. And honestly, I see a lot of people waste money when it comes to things like Facebook or pay-per-click or radio or newspaper or television, all of the ones that we've just covered, because they don't understand that they're starting by selecting the media. And that's how they're actually wasting the money. All of those media that we've just covered work spectacularly well. But when you match the wrong message to the wrong target with the wrong media, then you walk away going, well, that didn't work.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think you could summarize it much better than that, actually, David. That's super. Love it. So now then, we have an announcement here as well, don't we?
Okay. So we've been doing the podcast now for, we think, about 2.25 years, solidly, week after week, putting out an episode after episode after episode. And we need to have a little break. What we're going to do is not so much take a break and never come back, but we are going to take a defined break in putting the podcast out. And then we're going to come back with a season of podcasts. So we're putting together a series of topics to help people so that we can hit quality topics and do them in depth and do them properly, rather than just having to touch on the highlights as we roll through. So you're listening to the last podcast before the break. We'll be back just after the Australia Day weekend, which if you're in England means nothing to you. So 27th of January will be the date that we're back. Basically, I'm taking a bit of a summer holiday. David's going to take a bit of a winter holiday. We'll actually be recording some of the podcasts while the break is on, just so that we can get a bit ahead as well, and that we can focus on making sure that the messages maintain high quality, rather than putting out podcasts where we think that maybe the quality is not there. It's better to give you great quality information that's genuinely helpful to you than just making sure that we've got a podcast out every week. So, if you do have a topic that you would like covered, then it is imperative that you let us know. That way, we can make sure that the topics that we cover are the ones that the greater bulk of people want to know about. Doesn't matter. Nothing is too big or too small, because quite frankly, David and I can talk about marketing for hours, but we want to make sure that when we dig into the right topics for you.
We already have our list of topics for the new season when it returns. We have more than enough topics and content to talk about in these episodes, but we will be happy to replace one or two or more episodes, replace the content that we have in mind for one or two or three of those episodes with user-generated content if you come up with the good ideas for us, guys. So we're happy with that.
We're thinking that we'll do an 8-week season when we return next time, and that we will do three or four 8-week seasons for the year. So there's probably 6 months worth of active podcasting on the way, and 6 months worth of us recuperating. I'm thinking of the south of France.
It's a nice place to do it, I suppose. Anyway, right. So, look, for the time being, it's going to be over and out for slightly longer than usual from us. But you can still check out all the previous episodes. You know, if you're relatively new to the podcast, because, you know, podcasts like this gains traction over time. People discover us all the time. For somebody coming in maybe a few weeks ago, you really want to go back and check out some of the previous episodes, and they're all listed on our website at davidversusdavid.com. You can also interact with us and send us those messages about, hey, we'd like, could you cover this for us, please, or could you have a look at this and discuss this, and blah, blah, blah. You can interact with us through our Facebook page at facebook.com/davidversusdavid, and you can subscribe to us through iTunes, where you'll see lots of the other episodes there, and reviews and so on. Leave us a review if you can. If you subscribe, of course, iTunes, then you will get the next episode delivered to your inbox as and when it's released, which, as David is hinting there, will be towards the end of January. So, you know, it's going to be a little break now. We will be touching base ourselves to record some of the episodes in between, and we're looking forward to resuscitating this, coming back, getting in front of your ears in not so long, a couple of 3 months time. So a little break coming up, but we're looking forward to that as well. So David, I guess for now it's going to be over and out for a little while.
Yep. So it's goodbye from me here in beautiful Paradise, Tasmania. I look forward to talking to you in the next season of David versus David.
And it's goodbye from me here in the UK. Likewise. Over now. See you in a bit, guys.
You have just been listening to the David vs. David podcast with David Pritchard and David Council, helping you get knockout results with your online marketing and advertising. Please keep in mind that the ideas, opinions, and information shared in the show are those of the hosts and do not reflect those of their past employers.